What a special time here at the Public House, fans. Next to me is the greatest player who ever played the game of baseball, number 24.
Yeah.
And he needs no really further introduction. Nah. The Hall of Famer and the icon of baseball here in the Bay Area. Pat, he's a big fan of yours.
Mr. Mays. Willie Mays, good morning, sir. Thanks for coming out to the Public House here.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, 1954 was an amazing year for the New York Giants. You had come back from the Army, and you ended up in a World Series against the Cleveland Indians that year, a team that won 111 games. And Bruce Jenkins, Willie, was just on with us. He wanted to know, going into that World Series, and we'll talk a little bit about the season, but going into that World Series, what do you think? You're playing a team that won 111 games with that great pitching staff.
I think at that time, Martin, we was an underdog all the way.
Yeah.
When they have, I would say, four guys and they have 20 games, 119 and 320, you don't think to win any games. So when we start talking, Leo said, hey, we can beat these guys. Don't worry about it. So because in spring training, we played them like 10 or 15 games every year. So we knew all the guys that was on the team, so it wasn't a big deal for us, you know.
Well, Sal Magley goes in the first game for you guys, and Sal, of course, the barber, and he goes against Bob Lemon. And, you know, you had faced Bob Lemon before, a sinker ball pitcher. How about that matchup, Lemon and Magley?
Well, in spring training, I hit Bob very well. The key, I think, to what a series, I hit 24 home runs in spring training. And I said to Leo, that's too many. You know, set me down because I just got out of the Army and I was very strong. And Leo said, well, no, you got to play because you're just getting back. So we had a good camaraderie of players that knew how to play, but the fans didn't know how we played. Yeah. But we in New York said this to ourselves, and we always had a meeting about how we're going to hit each guy. Bob Lemon was their best pitcher at the time. They had Bob and, I guess, Feller.
Feller. They had Garcia.
Early Wynn. Yeah, Early Wynn was
there. Art Houdeman was another one.
Art who?
Art Houdeman, the left-hander, I think he was.
Well, he was in the bullpen.
Yeah, Houdeman was pretty good, too.
Oh, two of them was good. They won 15 games in release.
Now,
so it was pretty good.
You hit 24 home runs in spring training?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I hit 24 in spring training because I just got in the Army. Because I played in the Army. I played like 90 games in the service. So I was ready to play. I didn't have no problem, you know, going to spring training. But knowing Leo, you probably didn't know him well enough, but he wanted me to play every game because he had a seat on the bus. Beside him, he said, wherever I go, you go. I said, nah, Leo, I'm not getting paid that way. So we used to have a lot of fun.
Oh, you did. 1954. You know, of course, this is Willie Mays here for people just tuning in. 1954 is a great race in the batting title between you, your teammate Don Mueller, and Duke Snyder. It goes down to the very last game. It was very exciting.
Yeah. I didn't know this at the time. They told me after. Leo was a guy that he would watch me all the time. And I was really the last guy in the batting tower. And Duke was first, and then Mueller, and then myself. So Leo found some guys to bet. I didn't know all this junk. So when he was betting, I looked at him. I said, what is he betting about? He said, you don't want to know. So I think it was 3 for 5 or 4 for 5. I won it by maybe a couple points.
Yeah.
And Leo came to me and he said, oh, here's your 1,000. I said, for what? He says, well, you know, you deserve this. He didn't tell me all the details, you know, so he was a good guy for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know? Leo was great for you, Willie. And when you came up in 51, Willie just, you struggled a little bit. You hit the home run off Spahn. But Leo told you, he said, I don't care what you do, you're my center fielder.
That's what, I think that relaxes me more because he said to me, you're my center fielder. You don't have to hit, just go out there and catch the ball. Then on the other hand, he says, you got to play all three outfields. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. He says, we got guys can't catch the ball out here. But then Monty, I don't know if you remember, Monty broke his leg
right
in early 54 in spring training. So I said to Leo, how am I going to, you know, play all these fields? He said, well, you have to decide yourself, but I want you to catch all the balls that comes out here, especially fly balls, you know, because that was Dusty, had to, you know, replace Monty, and then that was Mueller.
Right.
And then Hank Thompson was out there for a while.
Boy, amazing.
When he came back, you know.
Boy, amazing. Now, when you went in the Army, you didn't have the basket catch. When you came out, you had the basket catch.
Yeah.
Did you find it in the Army?
Yeah. I decided that when I was in the Army, I got to do something for the fans when I get out of this, you know, out of the service. So I said, let me try the basket catch. I tried it, and I played about, 20 or 30 games, and I found out I could get rid of the ball very quickly. And when I came out, Leo says, what is that? I said, well, this is a new way I'm catching the ball. And he says, you can catch it any way you want it, but you don't miss one, it costs you $10,000.
Oh, God.
So I missed two balls 10 years apart, you know, one in the Polo Ground and one in Pittsburgh. So he gave me the money back, but he got 10 from me out of my paycheck.
My goodness. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's talk about game one of the World Series against the Indians.
Yeah.
And it's 2-2. Mm-hmm. It's in the eighth inning, and Magley gives up a walk to Larry Doby, and then Al Rosen gets a base hit.
Yeah.
So now they bring in Don Little, who's a left-hander, to face a very good hitter in Vic Wertz.
Vic, yeah.
And Wertz takes a pitch, and he hits the next one. And he hits it directly over your head. And I've seen the view from the home plate, and the ball is just crushed. So what happens in your mind as Little throws the ball and Wertz swings?
Well, in the Polo Ground, I used to play shadow. When I played shadow, anything that went up in the air, I thought I could catch it. But as the ball went so high, when I'm running, I'm saying to myself, how am I going to get this ball back into the infield? So as I'm catching the ball, I'm turning. If you see a film, you see me turning before I catch the ball because I knew that Larry was very quick. Then I found out Larry had to go back from third, tag up his second, then go back to third. So when I caught the ball, I just got rid of it because I never had a guy to come out and be a, you know, relief guy
cut
for me.
Man.
Nobody ever came out. So I had to get the ball back into the infield very quickly. So when I looked at it, only one guy advanced, and that was Larry. I think Al Rosen was still at first base.
Yeah, Al stayed at first, and because you got the ball in so fast, Doby could not have scored. Now, people could score on a deep fly ball in the Polo Grounds from second on a sacrifice fly. That could happen.
I did that about three or four times.
You did?
You know, long fly ball, and they're out there messing around. I would score from second because I could, you know, see the guy what they're doing out there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so now it's first and third and one out. And Dale Mitchell comes up, and he gets walked.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave Pope comes up. And this, to me, is the key of the inning, because when you think about it, it's 2-2, first game of the World Series, and now Pope is up. All he's got to do is hit the ball somewhere to get a run in. And Dave Pope ends up striking out.
Yeah.
And then Grissom gets a very tough hitter. You always told me, Jim Hegan,
yeah.
For the last out of that inning.
Yeah, Jim was a very tough hitter. And Grissom was a screwball guy. He always threw a screwball at the last pitch.
Uh-huh.
Then he got ahead of him, and I think that's what he got him out on. But Hegan was a good pinch hitter that they brought off the bench.
You've seen the catch so many times on TV, and it's the greatest catch ever in the history of the World Series. And when you see it on TV and you look at it, does it look any different to you? Does it look easier?
I didn't see it that way, no. I was a guy that when the ball went up, I should catch it very quickly. I didn't worry about all the details that people used to tell me about. I just, you know, would catch the ball, get it back in the infield very quickly. Alvin Dock was there. Eddie Stanky was there second. So I just feel that when I catch the ball, get rid of it. It wasn't any thing that I could do with the ball in the outfield but try to get it back into the infield.
Well, as Patrick said, Pecan said to me, he said, when he sees the play and you tap the glove,
yeah,
he knows you had it.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, if I tap the glove, I'm pretty close, I can catch the ball. And runners began to understand that, and they never would run. So I threw out I think in 54, I think I threw out 22 or either 51, 22. But then later on in the year, I only threw out 13 the next year because nobody ran.
Yeah.
You know, so I was okay.
All right. First game of the World Series now is saved, really, by you in an amazing play for the Giants in the eighth inning. But then it goes to extra innings in the 10th inning. And I think the 10th inning, a lot of things happen that you've always told me about. Wirtz hit a ball in left center field. Again, a tremendous hitter.
Yeah.
You're playing over in right center,
yeah.
And Grissom threw the ball in the outside part of the plate, and Wirtz crushes it into the alley, and that could have been a home run.
Yeah, but I had to cut it off like a shortstop. When I caught the ball, I looked at him. He was in the middle of going to third.
Wow.
If he'd have been a really fast runner, he might have scored. But I got the ball back into the infield so quickly that he only could get a triple out of it.
Wow.
But that was the hardest ball he hit. The ball they hit for the triple.
He's a good hitter, Vic Wirtz.
Oh, very hitter. Good hitter, yeah.
Good hitter. All right, so now you go to the bottom of the 10th inning, and and again, you get a walk, and the Cleveland Indians have changed catchers. Jim Hegan, who's a good defensive catcher, is out. Mickey Grasso is in. And you took a look at Mickey Grasso, and you said, I can steal a bag here.
No. But the way it happened is that Hegan got hurt some kind of way.
Yeah.
And when he got hurt, they brought in Mickey Grasso.
Right.
I think that's his name.
Yeah, Grasso. Yeah.
Okay. So when they came in, he only threw three pitches and back to the end to the pitcher.
Right.
I said, this guy can't throw me out if he's only going to throw three pitches. So I got to steal the base. So I go Leo. That means I have to steal. I give him my hand. Hey, I'm ready to go. He said, okay, go. So when I stole second, Grasso bounced the ball into the second baseman. So they walked Hank Thompson after
that. Right.
Then they pinch hit for for Monty with Dusty. That's how he got that, hit the home run.
Yeah, so it's first and second. Of course, they intentionally walk Hank Thompson. Hank Thompson was a heck of a ball player.
He was a good hitter, too. He hit 16, 17 home runs a year.
Yeah.
Very good third baseman.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, so now Dusty Rhodes. And, boy, you know, the names of baseball, like yourself, the Say Hey Kid, there's certain names that last forever. Dusty Rhodes, and he's from Alabama, right? Lamar Dusty Rhodes, and he comes up to pinch it. He's had a good season for the Giants.
Well, he was a guy that Leo used in different ways. You know, he knew Dusty wasn't a good fielder, but he's a good hitter.
Yeah.
Dusty won a lot of games for us during the regular season. So when Monty came up, and I give credit to Monty, he didn't complain at all.
Yeah.
Dusty came in, he hit a home run. The ball was about 250, maybe 260, into the stand. The polo ground, if you've ever been there, was a short right field, short left field.
Right.
And a long center field, long right field, long left field. So when he hit the ball, he didn't hit it real hard.
Right.
But he just got in the stand and Pope tried to catch it, but he couldn't get high enough to catch it,
Boy, and so Dusty Rhodes, it's a three-run homer. You win 5-2, and it's off Lemon. He goes the whole way. Mm-hmm. And now you've won game one of the World Series. What's the feeling now? Because this is a team that won 111 games, and you just beat them, and you showed you made the great play. How's the feeling afterwards?
Well, Leo is a type of manager that if he's beating you, he's going to step on you. So we had a meeting in the clubhouse, and Leo said, hey, we got these guys. We can kill these guys. He's like a motivator for all of us, So when the second game came around, he said, I don't care who's pitching. We got them, type of guy. So we won the first two in the polo ground. Then we went to Cleveland. He says, oh, this is a little short ballpark. We can kill them in here. But the first baseman, that hit
Wirtz.
Vic Wirtz hit a ball that I could have caught very easily for a home run.
Really?
And outfield there. So he was a pretty good hitter too.
Well, the pitching is always a story. Johnny Antonelli and Ruben Gomez win games 2 and 3. I never thought of Gomez as a big World Series pitcher, but he had a heck of a World Series.
He had a good season.
And a good career, right?
A career with us. He wasn't a bad hitter. He was a very, very good pitcher. He was a guy that had the ball every 3 or 4 days, And that time, you only could rest 3 days.
Right.
The fourth day, you're going to pitch. So he was a guy that he and Antonelli was, you know, young guys on the pitching staff. But he was pretty good. Antonelli was very good. We got him, I thought, from Milwaukee.
Right, for Bobby.
In a trade, I think.
Bobby Thompson. Bobby Thompson trade.
Oh, we got from, okay,
that's
Bobby,
right.
Yeah, okay.
That's right.
From Milwaukee?
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, I know he when he came over, he was just like a sore thumb. He could throw the ball very well. Leo and them had scouted him very well, so it was a good thing.
Yeah. Boy, what an amazing World Series. So you sweep the Cleveland Indians. What do you think after sweeping them?
When we swept them, you know, everybody would ask questions, how we do it. And Leo did the talking for us, you know, because well, we was kind of scared to say something because Cleveland has such a good team. They had the second baseman was the band championship.
Right.
I think Dobie was the home run hitting champion that year. So they had a good offense and defense team over there and pitching. And reliefers. So when you say it won 111, they probably could have won more because the team that they had, they could beat anybody.
Wow. You know? So do you still have your ring from 1954?
Well, I got a ring in 54, so I've taken it down to the jeweler and put in a 4-carat into the ring. Because it's more valuable when you got a couple of dollars and you go put a big diamond in there. As soon as they see the diamond, the ring is obsolete,
right?
Type of thing. So I did that. I think I have it at home now.
Nice.
I don't know where it is, but I think I can find it. If I can, it's worth a lot of money.
Well, we got 30,000 people today getting a replica World Series ring, and they're all lined up here ready to get it.
Getting a what?
Getting a World Series ring, a replica ring.
Uh-huh.
Mario Aliotta's to our right here, and... you know, he put this together, and it's a pretty exciting day out here to celebrate that World Series.
Oh, Mario, he's always ahead of us, you know. He got the ring. I'd like to see it one time. You got yours?
No, I don't.
You don't have it yet? Okay, all right. I just want to know, because if you got yours, I should have mine.
Right. Naturally, okay, if I give him mine won't be back. I know that's going to happen.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I know that. If I give you mine, I won't see it again.
No, I don't want yours. Larry will give me one. Don't worry about
that. I know that.
We'll go up there and we'll talk a little bit, and the ring will be in my pocket, so don't worry about all that kind of stuff.
I understand that quite well. Yes, I do. So after the World Series, back in New York in those days, they had all the TV shows, Ed Sullivan and all those things. Did you go on some of those shows?
Yes, I went on What's My Line.
Look on
your telephone, you'll see What's My Line, you'll see Ed Sullivan. That's how they got to say, hey, kid.
Really?
I think the one of the writers in New York made me to say, hey, kid. And then Ed Sullivan had me on there 2 and 3 times on the TV. And they would play a song to Trinia Brothers. It was 3 guys came on the TV and used to sing, you know, say, hey, type of thing. Yeah.
I love that song, though. You're in that song.
Yeah, I just said, say hey. That's all I said. They did the singing, man.
It did pretty well.
Yeah.
Hey, that year you're an MVP as well. And if you look back on your whole career, where does 1954 stack up in the things that you accomplished?
1954 got me off the ground, Marty. After the season, I get a call from Puerto Rico to come down and play Warner Ball. And I never played Warner Ball because they never let me play. But Mr. Stoneman was a friend of the guy in Puerto Rico. So I called Leo. I said, Leo, I got to go to Puerto Rico. He said, what they paying? I said, I don't know. I said, I'm kind of tired now because I played all the – I don't think I missed a game in 54.
Really?
Then I had played all the World Series. I said, man, I'm tired. But Leo called me back in about 5 minutes. He said, you got 50. I said, well, then I think I better go down there and come back and then, you know, get a rest. So my contract with them, if they get 6.5 games ahead, I could go back to New York.
Okay.
But I had to watch, you know, look in the paper every day. When they got back down to 1.5, I had to be on the plane.
Uh-oh.
Back to Puerto Rico. So we was pretty good. I had Clemente with us. He was the left fielder, and they moved him to right field. He and I played together, you know, very well for like 2 or 3 months.
Well, what do you think of Clemente as a young player?
Clemente?
Yeah.
this kid could play.
Yeah.
We got, when I went down there, I think he was about 18.
Yeah.
And Herman says, Willie, we got a kid over here. He can throw, he can run, he can hit, but he doesn't charge the ball like he's supposed to charge. So Herman says, could you come out every day and teach him how to catch the ball? I said, okay. So he and I used to go out by ourselves and just have a guy hit the balls with a hard line drives on the ground, and he learned to catch it. So when he got to Pittsburgh, I understand, they moved him from left field to right field because he had such a great arm, and he, you know, stopped a lot of runners, you know, going from first to third.
Yeah. Willie, the catch in 1954, was it the best catch you ever made in your career?
1954?
Yeah, the World Series catch.
I made a lot of good catches in the Polo Ground because it was a big ballpark. But you got to understand, this is a not World Series. This is one of the things that, you know, we didn't have a lot of TV there at that time. Well, maybe game of the week or something that we, you know, they would come and do. But in that particular game, it was a, you know, World Series game, and everybody wanted to, you know, that was somebody was in the ballpark that day. So it was a big thrill, but not just for the people in New York, but all around the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, I talk to people about the great catches, and the one I like is the one where your hat fell off. You caught your hat in one hand and the ball in the other.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I did that in Polo Ground. And as I'm catching the ball, my hat came off, and I caught the hat first, and then I looked up and I caught the ball. So Leo said, what are you doing out there? I said, Leo, hey, I had to catch the hat, man, because they just got this hat for me, and I don't have another one in the clubhouse. He said, well, you can do all those things out there. Again, he says, don't miss one. I said, okay, I got you.
You ever catch a ball barehanded? We saw Kevin Mitchell do that.
I caught two.
Barehanded?
Yeah, one in Pittsburgh and one in the, I think, in the Polo Ground. Off of the catcher, Smokey Burgess.
Okay.
He hits the ball off the left center. The only way I could catch it was just stick my hand out and catch it. But what they did when I caught it in Pittsburgh, I came into the dugout. And what they did, they gave me what they call the silent treatment.
Okay.
Nobody said a word. I said, Leo, did you see what I did? I just caught the ball barehanded. He said, go out and do it again, then I'll believe it, you know, type of guy. But they used to pay jokes on me all the time. And it was a thrill just to be there, man.
Yeah, you know, you in the clubhouse, I mean, you were kind of a funny guy. They play tricks on you.
Yeah.
Herman Franks would take your phonograph from time to time and hide it from you and all that.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good clubhouse with you, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, I say many times that I had my godmother, which was in New York, and her husband used to come to the Polo Ground because I didn't know anybody that much in New York, and she was more my guide later to make sure that I didn't have the wrong girls, make sure I didn't have the wrong guys there. So she would watch over me all the time. So I remember one time Leo said, they're giving you a day the next day. I said, what do you mean? He says, you come to the Polo Ground, and they're going to give you bicycles. They're going to give you all kinds of gifts. So when I went there, I had nobody to give this stuff to. So I called my godmother, and I said, hey, you come down, and I want you to have all this stuff for the kids in New York or in my block. So she taken it. I don't know what happened to it, but she taken it, and I'm sure she gave it out to somebody.
Wow. Hey, I have the World Series ring to give you.
Huh?
I have the ring to give you right here.
Let me see.
There it is.
And where's Mario?
He's right behind you. Mario, is this for Willie? Is this ring for Willie?
No, this is for you, man.
Oh, this is for me?
I guess so.
That's for Willie. No, it's got your. Now it's for you. You got it on your hand already.
Mario got this for me?
Yeah.
Where's the dollars that go with this? Yeah, it looks pretty good. I got to get out in the light and see this.
It's not.
Yeah, it looks like it's
good,
pretty
right?
good.
I tell you, it's the best.
Is that a small diamond here?
It's a very large diamond for you.
No, man, ain't no large diamond.
Yeah, I think.
Where's Larry? Larry got to take his round.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Can you stick around for a minute or two? I want to take a break for a minute. Is that okay?
You're going to take a break?
Sure, for a minute.
And I got up in the morning to come down here.
I don't need a break.
I've been up since 6 o'clock this morning. I said, I don't want to be late, man. So, you go ahead and get I'll break a cold. Go ahead and do what you got to do.
All right. Patrick, take us out here.
Well, Pecan, he's scared to talk?
I know my lane, Mr. Mays, and it's on the shoulder letting you two guys.
Mr. Mays, where you getting that from?
Hey, we'll be right back.
Nobody called me that.
With the legend, Willie Mays and Marty Murray, right here on KNBR 680, the sports leader.